May it please the court, justices, Mr. McFarland, counsel of record. For the record, Brian Chapman and myself, along with Jerome Capone, represent Clifford Wright, the defendant below, appellant with respect to his appeal from his convictions at trial in the Superior Court. If I may, I'd ask to reserve 5 minutes for a rebuttal argument.
Very well.
In our papers filed with the court, we have made three arguments regarding rulings made in the trial court, each of which violated the appellant's constitutional right to a fair trial. Before discussing each of these arguments, if I may, I'd like to point out some key dates which will provide some context for each of these arguments.
This is a direct appeal?
Yes. On July 9, 2006, Tammy Gardner and Gabriel Gabrielli were murdered. The state began their investigation, and 18 months later, in January of 2008, Clifford Wright was indicted for the murders of Tammy Gardner and Gabriel Gabrielli. Shortly thereafter, on February 5, 2008, Jerome Capone and myself were appointed to represent Clifford Wright. On that day, we sent out a discovery request to the state of Delaware. In that discovery request, we requested Brady material, along with other discoverable materials, pursuant to Rule 16 in the Superior Court Criminal Rules. Approximately 8 months later, on October 27, 2008, defense counsel, Mr. Capone, sent in a letter form a specific request for Brady material regarding other persons with motive to harm or kill either murder victim. Specifically in the letter was stated, perhaps other people with motive to harm Mr. Gabrielli. On September 8, 2009, 2 weeks before trial, a capital murder trial was scheduled to begin. The first of many last-second discovery dumps by the state of Delaware began. Included in those discovery dumps was an April 2, 2009 statement of Corey Gabrielli, three statements of Diane Gabrielli, and 700 pages of police reports, transcribed statements, all of which were turned over to the defense 2 weeks prior to the start of trial, a capital murder trial.
And then when you got them, could you tell how long they'd been in existence?
Well, Justice Holland, with regards to the April 2, 2009 statement of Corey Gabrielli, that statement was offered by Corey Gabrielli on April 2, 2009 to Detective Abram of the Newcastle County Police. Thus, I believe it's fair to presume they had had that statement since April of 2009, and it took them 5 months to turn it over to the defense. Furthermore, the three statements of Diane Gabrielli, one of those was in May of 2009. I believe the other two were in 2008. Again, we did not receive those until 2 weeks prior to the start of trial. Following this discovery dump, we filed a motion to dismiss, claiming a fatal Brady violation. The motion was heard, and on September 22nd, trial began in Superior Court. A little over a week later, trial court issued a written opinion denying our motion to dismiss. The first argument in our papers filed with this court was that the trial court erred in denying the motion to dismiss for the Brady violation.
Actually, when you say the Brady violation, you mean for producing the materials 5 months late?
Correct, Your Honor.
Or close to trial.
Yes, it's more based on the suppression until 2 weeks prior to the start of trial, correct?
All right, and I assume that the basis for the argument was that you received the materials too late to be able to use them effectively in their defense?
Correct.
Can you specify exactly how that prejudice occurred?
Yes. Thank you, Justice Jacobs. With regards to that, the state of Delaware in this investigation focused on who would have motive to kill Tammy Gardner, the female victim. When we were appointed the case, we had two strategies pre-trial with regards to our investigation. One was to discredit that investigation, and the second was to look at other persons who would have had motive to harm Gabriel Gabrielli. The most obvious person who would have had motive to harm Gabriel Gabrielli was his ex-wife, Diane Gabrielli.
Because of the insurance.
She had the $750,000 life insurance policy. Gabriel Gabrielli had taken out a protection from abuse order 2 months prior to his death.
The question is, if you had been furnished these materials 1 month, 2 months, 3 months earlier, what would you have done that you didn't do at the trial?
In all likelihood, due to the state suppressing these statements for 5 months, any potential leads that we would have gotten from the interview of Corey Gabrielli in April of 2009 potentially became stale. The ability to find the information that he produced in that interview and to follow up with that became much more difficult. 2 weeks prior to trial, obviously, there are time-sensitive matters which need to be focused on with the start of trial looming.
Did you point that out to the court and ask for a continuance?
I don't believe, Your Honor, we did ask for a continuance. I believe our solution for the issue of the state suppressing this evidence was to file the motion to dismiss, and I do not believe at any point the trial court any way entertained continuing the matter. There was definitely a potential speedy trial issue with regards to the fact that our client was indicted in January of 2008 and the trial was scheduled to start in September of 2009, so we're almost nearing on 24 months from the date of indictment. A little short of that, obviously, 21 months. So there wasn't any real consideration by the trial court to continue the matter. Just to follow up on the issues with the withholding the statements for 5 months, it was the defense's opinion that Diane Gabrielli, being a petite woman, could not have completed these two murders, cleaned up the crime scene, transported the bodies in a van to a park a few miles away from the crime scene. There was the belief that she couldn't have completed this herself. She was too small of a woman. The time frame didn't allow for it to happen. So
I just want to interrupt you so you elaborate on Justice Jacobs' question in your answer as you go on, because you moved to dismiss rather than ask for a continuance. So what you need to demonstrate to us is why a dismissal was the only remedy. Now, you mentioned you thought there were speedy trial concerns, but clearly if it's your motion, then there wouldn't be a speedy trial concern, even though you would attribute the need for a continuance to the state's delayed discovery, so it might have been complicated. But at least if you'd asked for a continuance, the court could have had that discussion about whether you were going to waive your speedy trial concern in return for a continuance so you could get discovery and do an investigation. But if we're at the point where the only alternative was a dismissal, explain to us why that was the only alternative.
There was information provided in these interviews, which happened 5 months prior to the state producing them, with regards to specific individuals who may have been involved with the murder of these two people. Due to the fact that we didn't receive them until 5 months later, our ability to locate these people was significantly diminished.
Well, did you try to locate them?
Yes, we did. We had our investigator who did eventually speak with one of the individuals, a Mr. Spence, who was mentioned by Corey Gabrielli. We were not able to locate the...
So you were able to locate one?
Yes.
Didn't locate the other?
There was two others we did not know.
Were you able to demonstrate that had you received the Brady materials earlier that you would have been able to locate the second one?
I think unfortunately...
Or did you just conclude?
I think unfortunately that, we're potentially talking in hypotheticals in terms of we weren't able to locate them so close to trial. I can't really confirm or deny if we would have been able to locate these two people. We had a general location of where some of these acts may have happened, but the ability to actually concretely tell a court...
Well, the basis for the motion to dismiss is now reduces to inability to locate one person.
Two people.
I thought you located one of them.
I apologize, Justice Jacobs. There was three names
there were three
that were...
and you located one and there were two missing.
Correct.
Okay. And, you know, in order for that argument to work, there has to be some showing, doesn't there, that had you received the materials in a more timely fashion, you would have been able to locate the other two. I mean, we don't, otherwise it's unknowable. You know, they may not have been locatable, you know, even if the materials had been produced earlier.
I understand and appreciate that argument. However, we did have the ability in terms of we had experienced investigators who had located witnesses for us. In terms of the argument that the evidence withheld wasn't material, our application is it was, in terms of it very well likely.
What I'm really, I guess the question becomes, was it a strategic decision not to ask for continuance? Because you did have the means, that is the investigative muscle power, to do whatever could be done to locate the missing two persons, but then the trial would have been postponed.
Correct.
If, as you indicated to us, the court was, unwilling or probably unwilling to entertain any motion that would result in the trial being postponed, then that might make the court more amenable to just simply granting your motion to dismiss.
And Justice Jacobs, right? I will state that I apologize if I interrupted you, but the trial judge in the trial court made it abundantly clear to all trial counsel involved that the trial date was not going to be continued. We were going to begin selecting a jury on September 22nd. So when the motion to dismiss based on the Brady violation was argued in the trial court, the trial judge made it extremely clear to all counsel involved that the matter was not going to be continued. A panel had already been brought in, and we were going to begin selecting the jury on the 22nd.
So you're saying it wasn't a strategic decision, or it was?
It was made abundantly clear by the trial judge that the trial
I'm not asking what the trial judge did. I'm asking what you did.
In light of what the trial judge told us, we did not request the continuance because we believed there was no way it was going to be fruitful. Again, just to follow up on the materials that were not produced until 2 weeks prior to trial, the main focus that the defense had throughout this process was that Diane Gabrielli couldn't have done this herself. She would have needed others to be involved. We made that request clear to the state of Delaware in October of 2008, and they didn't produce these documents until September of 2009.
Well, I was just looking at your opening brief, and it ends with a request for a new trial. So if you prevail and you have a new trial, what's going to be different in your case at a new trial? Because you're telling us all of these things that you got late can never be cured, that it's just impossible to find anybody, and you would have done things a lot differently. So what's a new trial remedy going to do?
It will definitely potentially give us more time to investigate some of this information we have. In terms of when we received this information from the state, we were under a two-week deadline. Clearly, if we're provided with a new trial, then we'll have the ability to, again, hire investigators, start an investigation up, and potentially see what other witnesses we can locate to help establish what was stated by Corey Gabrielli in April of 2009.
Do I correctly understand, because your lead-off argument, at least in this chamber, concerns the Brady materials, that is your lead argument, and the other two are subsidiary?
I would say that's correct, Justice Jacobs. Okay. Yes.
Well, you made a motion for a new trial that was apparently submitted in May of 2010, and then it was decided in July. But if the trial took place in the fall of 2009, then you had a lot of months leading up to the ruling on the new trial motion to do some investigation? And did you have anything to submit to the court in support of the motion for a new trial during those many months you had to investigate?
The initial motion for new trial, which we filed shortly after the jury's verdict in November of 2009, in the days between the guilt or innocence phase and then the sentencing phase. With respect to sending our investigators out to attempt to locate those witnesses, I don't believe any of that was done. Directly after the motion for new trial was filed, we were in the process of locating witnesses and getting prepared for the penalty phase, because it was a capital murder trial. We needed to prepare for the penalty phase.
Right. Well, you're in your rebuttal time. Do you want to save the rest?
I would like to. Thank you.
May it please the court, Elizabeth McFarland on behalf of the state. The court appropriately has approached this Brady issue by looking at prejudice first as the most efficient way to consider this claim, because there was none.
So to put it in context, though, tell us why it was impossible for the state to produce this until 2 weeks before trial.
It was not impossible, Your Honor.
When could the state have produced it?
Conceivably, they could have produced it, for example, the statement shortly after it was made. It was not. That was clearly, at that point, it was not considered to be Brady material because, and the state does not concede it is Brady material, that, for example, Corey Gabrielli's statement.
But I thought you produced it as Brady material 2 weeks before trial.
It was produced in discovery 2 weeks before trial, but it was not listed as Brady material. The state routinely turned over documents that it was not required to turn over, police reports and other documents, simply because they found no reason not to.
And so why was this group of material done 2 weeks before trial rather than earlier? It seems the discovery quest had been outstanding for quite a while.
Some of these things they already had. Other things were simply things that could not be used at trial and were not. For example, Corey's statement was purely speculative. He said it was purely speculative. He had nothing to base it on, and therefore it was what you would call a false lead. There was nothing there.
I understand that. I'm going to try to make my question really clear, because I don't want to use up your time.
Okay.
I'm obviously not making myself clear. 2 weeks before the trial, you decided to give all of this to the defense. You have all these reasons why it was gratuitous. But let's assume that it really was something that should have been produced. What happened 2 weeks before trial that made the state say, let's give it to the defense? Was it simply gratuitous? You were looking around your office. I know it wasn't you. You saw all these things and say, why don't we give this to defense? Or what changed that resulted in its production?
Well, some of the things were purely administrative issues within the department. That is not an excuse. It's just an explanation.
Does that mean somebody finally focused on it?
No, there were two different complaint numbers, which apparently caused some problems. And yes, once things got closer to trial, of course, there is more of a focus on something, and at that point there are more people reviewing the file and double checking to make sure things have gone out. Also, although it was 2 weeks before jury selection, it was not 2 weeks before the actual trial started. It was a month ahead, and in fact 2 months before the defense case.
Well, tell me what this court can do to help sort out these type of institutional problems. Over the years, I can't tell you how many cases I've heard involving late production of discovery material. You know, the Friday before the Monday of trial, during the middle of a witness's testimony. And in every case, we need to resolve something that should never have come up ever. What would you suggest we do to inspire people to produce things in a timely way?
Well, I do think that in general that they do produce things in a timely way that they're required to produce. They were not required to produce these things.
All right, that's a second question that I have. I understand the Superior Court's analysis and the citation to the Brady line of cases that say this wasn't Brady material. But we've had other cases in this court where we've said words to the effect, if it's close and it could be Brady, it should be disclosed, and then we can sort out later that it wasn't Brady. What's the rule you're advocating, that the state simply on its own read the cases, if it decides that it's Brady material, but for the fact it really isn't worth anything, then the state doesn't have to disclose it? Or should the rule be, if it is Brady material, but there's an argument it's not worth anything, and then it should be produced, and some judge should sort out the argument?
I'm not sure I'm clear as to when you're saying that the prosecutors look at it and determine whether or not it's a close call.
Well, in this case, the Superior Court said this looks like Brady material. And then, at the end, the court applying the cases said it didn't have to be produced because the one witness who made the statement almost immediately took it back. Except for the recantation, for want of a better term, the court said it clearly was Brady material. Now, in this case, the state did produce it 2 weeks before trial. My question is, when you have something that's Brady material followed by a recantation, shouldn't it be produced as Brady material and deal with the recantation separately?
Well, it's either Brady material or it's not, and whether, and that is a call that is left to the prosecutors
to
follow.
So the judges don't get involved at all. That's my question. In our prior decisions by this court, we said if something's close, let the court decide it. Don't not disclose it, then later have it come to the attention of someone, and then we have litigation. Wasn't Brady material or wasn't it Brady material?
Well, the problem with getting the court involved is then you have to start drawing lines of this is, how close is this to Brady? How close is this? You're getting into gradations where then prosecutors who have determined that something is not Brady have to then do a second analysis and say, well, it's not Brady, but is somebody going to think this is close to Brady or not? And that becomes even more burdensome and is going to delay.
So what is, just to follow up on Justice Holland's question, you know, this is not the kind of issue that the court should be involved in at all, but we are involved. There are limited tools that the court has to try to cure problems that have been caused by, for want of a better word, incompetence on the part of the Attorney General's office. One of those is to dismiss the indictment or to postpone the trial. The trial judge could have done that. The other is to start creating presumptions that will be adverse to the state if you have this kind of late production. And there may be other options, and we're just asking you, and it may be something you haven't had time to think about, but, you know, we'd like to know if there are any middle grounds between extreme remedies and doing nothing.
Well, certainly the Superior Court, the trial court, is in a position to enforce their discovery scheduling orders, and that is something that perhaps they should, that could be something that could be worked out with the trial court. And if there are claims, you know, that there is not production in a timely way, that's been dealt with in the past. But dismissal is hardly, is a bit draconian remedy for a late production of what wasn't Brady material.
Well, the problem really is, at least as I see it, that getting a trial, especially a capital murder trial, on the schedule and getting everybody's time blocked off and all the witnesses and so forth, that's a pretty cumbersome process.
Yes.
And the idea of having to postpone the trial at the very last minute sends everything into chaos, if you will. It could mean a postponement for as much as 6 months or a year even to get everything back together with all the necessary dates available and so forth. So if that's not a viable alternative, namely at the last minute give the defense more time, then there needs to be something else as opposed to just waiting till the last minute, which, by the way, I'm not suggesting the state did on purpose here, but the state understands how the system works, and if you provide information at the last minute, the other side's going to complain about it, but you've got your trial coming up, and the court is less likely to postpone the trial, so it all gets, you know, a little slap on the wrist or whatever, and it goes away. What we're all trying to deal with is the fact that that doesn't seem like an appropriate way to resolve what are pretty serious issues with respect to discovery for the defendant.
I understand where the court's coming from. The problem here is that by turning over more than we're required to do, now the state is being, in a sense, being reprimanded for turning over material they didn't have to turn over
at the last minute.
So they shouldn't have turned it over at all, and then there wouldn't have been an issue. If it's not discoverable, then,
well,
or Brady material.
Well, you kind of can't have both sides of this one. You know, you produce this material because somebody in your office thought that it ought to be produced, not because somebody in your office said, gee, we have this pile of stuff, we don't need it, let's give it to them. You know, it was done with a conscious decision that this material should be produced to the other side, but it was done at the last minute. That same decision could have been made 5 months earlier. And our concern is, if you're going to produce this material at all, because you have to or because you believe you may have to or whatever reason, if you're going to produce it, it's got to be in a timely fashion.
So then the court would find that if we elect to turn over material we aren't required to turn over, that it has to be done well ahead?
Who's determined that you weren't required to turn it over? I mean, that's what you say.
Well, the court
but
found
the other
it was
side, had it known about this material, might have something quite different to say, and the court might well agree with the defendant. So before you put the rabbit in the hat and refer to this material as a material you never had to turn over in the first place, don't you need to be thinking about how that gets established?
Yes. Well, the state still contends, and the Superior Court found, that this was not Brady material. And
well,
also they already knew about.
In this particular case, as I understand it, the defense sent a letter requesting specifically that anybody else have motive. You have a statement that, at least the initial statement, said someone else had a motive. But because it was almost a contemporaneous recantation, you said, well, the first statement doesn't count. Why shouldn't the system operate that when someone says someone else has a motive and then recants, you answer the defense request and says, and we have a statement to the effect that someone else has a motive that was immediately recanted and we're not giving it to you because we just don't think it matters, and then have the court decide that?
There needs to be some way to link an alleged person with a motive to the crime in some fashion. Otherwise, any prior beef someone had with someone for their life could be someone who potentially has a motive.
Well, in this case, didn't we have an ex-wife and a protection from abuse order?
And they knew all of that. They had all of that. They knew about her insurance. They knew she had a motive.
But they didn't know about this statement.
They did not know about this statement, and it wasn't just a recantation after the statement. Throughout the statement, he said, I don't really have any basis to make this. I'm just speculating. He specifically said that during his statement. So it wasn't just almost contemporaneous. It was contemporaneous in the midst of that statement. And all he did, in regards to his stepmother, was say that she had a motive, and here's some, well, that they already knew she had a motive. They were already looking into her. They already knew about her insurance policy. They were already getting her bank records. They already knew about David Spence. They had his name in relation to cell phones. They knew he existed. They knew he'd paid for a cell phone for her. So this was not news that she had a motive to them at all. And then once again, if we go to the prejudice, he was called as their witness at trial. They knew about the Lawtons before the state did.
He being who?
Corey. I'm sorry. Okay. Sorry, I wasn't clear.
And he was examined about his statements?
Yes.
Both of them?
Yes. They used all this information and were able to use it in the defense case. What was admissible or what they could track down. The chances that they would have ever been able to track down two people from 2004 that one of whom was named Muhammad and one of whom they weren't sure what the name was, started with an R, was very slim, and the chance that that would be connected to this crime was very slim. To this day, they obviously have not found that person or those people. There was nothing to link that to the crime at issue here at all. The state's position in terms of whether something motive people with potential motives, information about that would be Brady if there is some way to link it to the crime, some evidence, then it would be. There was nothing here that would link a 2004 meeting in Philadelphia somewhere with threats to the family of a victim to this crime whatsoever. It was too attenuated and too remote. And then in the context of how the statement was given, it made it even less likely. and in terms of they did not ask for a continuance. And although they may have felt the Superior Court would not have granted it, that's not a good reason not to ask for it if they truly believed that they could use a continuance in this case to discover more information.
Well, but it goes back to Justice Berger's point. In a capital murder case, everybody needs to be doing their best at all times. So you would think in a capital murder case with a year and a half to get ready for trial, all the discovery issues would get resolved in a timely way, because once you're within 2 weeks of the trial, the system simply doesn't have the ability to reschedule a capital murder case without a substantial delay. So, isn't that the point of this, that everybody should be at their best in all cases, but certainly in a capital murder case, they ought to really be sparkling?
Certainly. The state would agree, and it was a late disclosure, and the state is not disputing that. However, they were able to use that information effectively at trial. And it is important to realize, too, and as part of the record in this particular case, that prosecutors do routinely turn over more than they're required to turn over. And that shouldn't be held against them
I think the issue, again, is not that that's being held against them. It's the lateness of whatever they decided to turn over that's the problem.
Yeah, thank you, Your Honor. Would the court care to hear anything on the other claims? Or if not, the state will rest.
You have 4 minutes left. If you'd like to address those two issues, you certainly can.
In terms of the Rule 17 subpoenas, the state would just like to make clear that there is a difference between AG subpoenas and everyone else, and there should be a difference. That we are the law enforcement agency. The Attorney General is the head of the law enforcement agency. He's an elected official, and he's been given a statutory ability to use an AG subpoena to investigate and enforce the laws. That if the General Assembly had wanted everyone to have that power, they could have given it to them.
When you say that power, you mean without prior judicial clearance?
Yes. And it is something that needs court oversight, and it's important to maintain that. For people have an interest in privacy. There are the defense has a narrow interest. The Attorney General's office has a broad interest in seeking both inculpatory and exculpatory evidence. It's the duty of the office, and we have a different duty in turning information over. And
Ms. McFarland, I don't understand the other side to be complaining about the legal framework in which we're operating. It's simply that, about the fact that the court has the power and the duty of judicial oversight of any subpoenas that they send out. It's the argument is that the court, in the exercise of its oversight, should have allowed those subpoenas to be executed. And
well, they didn't actually follow the rule, and they didn't get judicial oversight ahead of time on a number of these, and they asked to have it returned pre-trial to their own office rather than to the court. And there's been a series of problems in the misuse of Rule 17 subpoenas, not necessarily with counsel here, but the defense bar in general, and the state would contend that it's important to maintain the rule and make them abide by it. If there are no questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning again. If I may, I think Ms. McFarland's comments with regards to the Rule 17C subpoenas kind of highlight the argument that the appellants made with regards to the Brady violation. The facts are the state, the Attorney General's office, they have the ability to gather all this evidence. And we, as the defense, have a much more limited basis in order to do that. In this case, we started 18 months behind the state of Delaware. In terms of...
And do you agree that you should have asked the court permission to do this?
I agree, yes. Justice
and you
Hall.
Didn't.
I agree.
So are you suggesting it's not a good rule, or you're just inconvenient, or you were in a hurry?
I'm suggesting there needs to be a more... a more accessible option for the defense to be able to obtain documents for its investigation.
And what's the burden of asking the court?
There's obviously some delay then in the process in obtaining them.
Well, tell us about it. I mean, does it take a week to get a ruling? Does it take months?
It potentially could take the matter getting scheduled in front of a calendar. There's also then if the matter does get put in front of the trial judge, the state of Delaware becomes aware of where our investigation's going. So there are some, I would say, detriments to having the court involved in terms of the delay in the procuring results.
Well, tell us the legal error that the Superior Court made given the current rule in this case.
I think the legal error the Superior Court made with regards to the Rule 17C subpoenas was the assumption that the documents that were to be produced by the Rule 17 subpoenas were only going to be used for impeachment purposes. That wasn't the intention. The intention was to aid our investigation in determining the whereabouts of other people with motive to harm Gabe Gabrielli and Tammy Gardner. It wasn't necessarily only for impeachment purposes. And I think that's the way the federal court has addressed Rule 17C. They have made it clear that it is possible, it's frowned upon by obtaining statements from witnesses to use for impeachment purposes. However, that was not our intention. These subpoenas were issued to obtain cell phone records from other people who may have had motive to harm Tammy Gardner and Gabe Gabrielli. Just to briefly go back to the Brady issue, I think it's very important to note that our investigators tried to speak with Corey Gabrielli on multiple occasions. They tried to speak with Diane Gabrielli at least 11 times, and she did not talk to our investigators. So our ability to obtain any information from either one of those.
Do you think that their attitude would have been more gentle and relenting if you had tried to do that 5 months earlier?
I can't really comment on their attitude because I think their attitude was somewhat swayed by what they were told by the state of Delaware not to talk to defense investigators. And I don't know if the period of time may necessarily change that. However, the egregious suppression of these...
Well, if the period of time wouldn't change that, then why are we here?
Because the ability to investigate the information contained in that April 2, 2009 interview of Corey Gabrielli was severely hindered by the state not turning it over for 5 months.
You say that, but on the other hand, you also tell us that your investigators made multiple efforts to talk to Ms. Gabrielli and she wouldn't talk to you.
Correct.
Why would that be any different if you had received the information 5 months earlier?
Because the information contained in the interview we would have been able to follow up with other individuals we would like to speak to, other documents we'd have liked to obtain as a result of that interview. Not necessarily to discuss the contents of the interview with him, but to potentially investigate other leads from the information in that interview. Thank you.
Yeah, and I have a question. I know your time's up, but at the end of the day, the Superior Court concluded none of this was Brady material. And tell us where the Superior Court erred. What's the legal reversible error in the Superior Court's conclusion that this was not Brady material?
The legal reversible error is the Superior Court decided that the information withheld by the state wasn't material. And I believe it was Mendez versus Artuz, the court said, advancing the idea that someone else wanted to kill the victim for an entirely different motive than the one attributed to the petitioner as advanced by the prosecution at trial would have given the defendant the opportunity to establish reasonable doubt in the jury's mind as to who harmed the victim. That is the reversible error the Superior Court made by finding the evidence the state suppressed for 5 months not to be material. That was a reversible error. If it was material, then obviously it was Brady. It should have been turned over long before.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both. The court will take this under advisement. We'll take a recess.
Thank you, Justices.